From the Palatial Yet Not Overly Ostentatious Studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to what is a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. 855-212-4227 is the number to jump on in. That's 855-212-4227. And you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, X, at Zach Gelb. That's ZACHGELB. I got Stuart Kovacs. I got Pat Boyle rocking and rolling with me all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time. Josh Pate's going to stop by at the top of the hour. CBS Sports College Football Analyst Ryan Hickey's going to join us in studio. I don't know how we booked him, but he joins us each and every Wednesday. He will stop by today at 4:40 p.m. Eastern. And then Willie Colon will chat a little Jets and Steelers with the former NFL offense alignment at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific time. Let me, because I'm a man of accountability, and I do not hide when things don't go my way, but let me just acknowledge right out of the gate, since Pat Boyle is here, and I know Pat Boyle will be extremely douchey if I don't acknowledge this, I lost two things to Pat Boyle in the last few days. The first one is fantasy football. I was playing Pat Boyle in a league where his father took the San Francisco 49ers defense in the sixth round, Pat, I believe that was.
Browns defense in the sixth round.
Browns defense. Oh, my goodness gracious. I thought it was the Niners. So he took the Browns defense in the sixth round, fourth round. What was it? Six?
Sixth round.
Okay. That was a disaster. But I played Pat in week one, and I had Chris Godwin on my bench, and I did not start him, and I lost to Pat by like 5 or 6 points. So I took an L to Pat Boyle, and that was not the only L I took to Pat Boyle, because in a yearly tradition, unlike any other, in week one of NFL picks, I always go 0-3. So I went 0-3. I think Pat went 2-1. Pat did go up against me as we're doing a rotating guest each and every week on picks. The guy that is supposed to join us on Friday had to bail on us last second for week one, so we called in Pat Boyle from the U.S. Open, and Pat Boyle did defeat me in week one of NFL picks. So I am a man of accountability. If I'm going to call people out for things that they get wrong, I then need to say when I got things wrong, and I was a loser in one fantasy football game this week and also in NFL picks to Pat Boyle. With that being said, though, I don't give out words like that without having another weapon or a bullet in my chamber. Coming up later, we will revisit something that Pat Boyle said from this offseason that is already just done and over with. You could not have been more dead wrong with a certain team, and I couldn't be more right about a certain team, and we will get into that coming up later. Man, I don't know. You know what? I don't want to make people wait today. Let's do it at 3:40 p.m. Eastern time. So coming up in about 38 or so minutes from now, we will revisit a take of Pat Boyle. You had a big compliment today. You got a big compliment that you don't even know about.
I don't.
Yeah, so I do a weekly hit with Mark Hochman and Channing Crowder and Alejandro Solana. I'm Odyssey's 560 WQAM. And Mark Hochman goes, I was tuning in to listen to you to do Eye on Football. And then I heard that it was Gridiron Game Day because of the name change. And for the first 5 minutes, I thought it was you because the guy sounds like you that's doing it this year. And then he said his name. And last week, you didn't lose your Eye on Football virginity because you did it. You filled in for me one time last year. But your Gridiron Game Day virginity, hosting that show now. And you got a very nice compliment from Mark Hochman. He said, not only does he sound like you, which I think is a compliment, but number two, he said you did a flawless job getting him through a NFL Sunday. So congratulations to you. How was that in Detroit, by the way?
That was great. That was awesome. We did it from the MGM Grand in Detroit, which, by the way, you're inside of it. You feel like you're in Vegas, a gigantic casino, beautiful BetMGM Sports Lounge. Everything was immaculate, perfect. And logistically, the show went about as perfectly as you could. Mm-hmm. All of our stringers and reporters, excellent job. Both the guys here in New York and producer Nico and our on-site engineer were great, so it was fantastic. I thought it went 10 out of 10, and it was beautiful, so
look,
appreciate
at you.
That.
You being like a politician, giving thanks to everyone and making it seem like it was a wonderful broadcast. Don't get me wrong, it was a very good broadcast. I listened for about 30 minutes, but can these stringers who I love and I know very closely, I know them very well, can they get a few guests on after the game? Can we get a few players on from the locker room? What the heck happened there?
Well, I didn't want to throw anybody under the bus, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's because it was week one or what, but I was...
Board ops were asleep, maybe? Weren't screening the calls accurately in the locker room after the game in that quick process?
No, I think our guys, Billy Jocolone and Manny Rodriguez, who were working on the show, kept texting them. We were texting them, hey, got any players? Anybody from the locker room? Nothing.
Billy Jock is always ready to rock. Manny, I don't know. Manny could have dropped the ball. Because Manny yesterday, as much as I love him, he cannot sit still, and he starts picking up a baseball bat and swinging it around the studio as I'm giving a take. So there could have been a chance that Manny picked up a baseball bat and then missed, I don't know. Give me one of the stringers' names real quickly for one of the matchups that you had.
Tom McCabe.
Yeah, maybe he didn't have Tom McCabe standing by with a NFL player because Manny couldn't have any hands that were free because he was swinging a baseball bat around the
stadium. Yeah, I was hoping maybe we get an Alec Pierce after the big game he had in that Colts-Texans game, although they did lose, so maybe, I don't know, maybe we should expect it.
Always a winner.
A Nico Collins.
Yeah, out of Michigan.
Or a Joe Mixon.
Sure.
But no players.
Kidding aside, I thought you did a very good job.
Appreciate it.
That's going to be a good show to listen to. You can listen to me Sunday Morning Football from 10 a.m. to noon on Sundays. And then we lead into Pat Boyle, who's on from noon to 8 p.m. Eastern. And you'll be back in the studio this week.
Yes, unless another nice remote opportunity pops up throughout the rest of the season. The plan is weeks 2 through 18 will be here in New York.
Now, just letting you know, when I first started doing Eye on Football and D.A. was in studio for Sunday Morning Football, since I was the new guy, that first time we were in studio, I brought everyone breakfast. So I got breakfast for everyone, the Sunday Morning Football crew, the Eye on Football crew. So since now you are the head honcho of what is Gridiron Game Day, I expect some Gridiron Game Day grub right when I get out of the studio at 12 on Sunday. I'm just saying, I like a egg everything bagel. Let's go. I'm eating a little bit healthier, so we go egg whites and cheese and well done bacon, if you will do that for me, sir.
Sure, yeah. Here, let me write it down really quickly so I have it ready to go on Sunday.
I heard Nico likes no pulp in his orange juice. So just make sure that you take care of everyone, all right?
Will do.
Okay. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't open up the show today acknowledging that obviously it is 9/11. As someone that grew up on Long Island, that always hits close to home, unfortunately. And the last 6 years, I have called Financial District, the Financial District area, my home, and I walked past where the World Trade Centers, the Twin Towers were each and every day, multiple times throughout the day. So obviously today is a somber day. It's a day that we never forget, and we thank all the heroes, all the first responders, and obviously remember all the innocent lives that unfortunately we lost on that tragic day back on September 11, 2001. And obviously, sports played a big role in the healing process because sports, in a moment of tragedy, not that it brings your dad or your mom or your aunt or your uncle or your grandparent that you may have lost on that day back, but it gives you a distraction. And for me, from a sports standpoint, I remember Joe Andruzzi, whose brothers are New York City firefighters, running out onto the field with the two American flags for Patriots and Jets. Obviously, as a crazy Met fan, I remember the Mike Piazza home run up against the Atlanta Braves, and Chipper Jones has told me it's like the only time he was actually happy that the Mets beat the Braves in that game that night when baseball did return. So sports did play a big role in the healing process to give us a distraction and to get us back to feeling to a time of it being a little bit normal. And obviously for many people, life will never be normal again after what did happen on September 11th. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's open up the show talking about Colorado football. So I went to the Yankee Royals game last night, and a buddy of mine really wanted to go to Yankee Stadium. He's never been to Yankee Stadium before. We get tickets around here. So I got two tickets from the bosses around here. We go to the Yankee game. We have a good time. The building was just absolutely silent. The Yankees did nothing in the game. They got shut out. Seth Lugo p- pitched an absolute gem. I was betting no run first inning, and then I lost another inning, and then I won another inning where I was going 0-0 on the innings just to get a little extra skin into the game to make it what was a rather pedestrian game rather exciting. But since I had this planned with my buddy, I didn't know that this was going to be the night of the second presidential debate and the first one between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, because the last one was Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And I am not a political guy. I don't get into crazy political conversations. I just listen and I vote for who I think is the best man or woman to lead our country. So I was a little disappointed because I actually thought, I know most people thought the first debate was embarrassing. I just thought it was entertaining, if I'm just being fully transparent. So I was a little disappointed that I was going to miss most of the debate. So I ended up getting home, and it was like halfway through the debate. And I heard Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, say he has concepts of a plan. And the moment when I thought about that, because there's moments in a debate that you will hear that will go viral, and then being the sports talk radio guy, where our job is not as serious as maybe political hosts today that have to break down this debate, and right, there are so many mixed emotions when breaking down the debate. I'm like, how do we incorporate what Donald Trump said last night in terms of having concepts of a plan into our show today? Because everyone in America right now is talking about concepts of a plan and that line from the debate. So I thought about Colorado football. And I'm trying to figure out what is Coach Prime's concepts of a plan. Because so far, through the first year and two games, we have seen Colorado football generate a lot of attention, generate a lot of drama and buzz. But Coach Prime won four games last year after starting off 3-0, won one game down the stretch. And this year, he barely beat North Dakota State. And last year, a team that they blew out in Nebraska. Nebraska just crushed them, and the game was over pretty much at halftime in Lincoln. So I look at what Coach Prime is doing right now, and I was a Coach Prime believer, but this Colorado football team is not going to be a team under Coach Prime's watch that is an actual good football team. Like, we know they have great individuals. Shedeur Sanders is easily going to be a first-round pick. Travis Hunter will easily be a top five, top 10 pick in the NFL draft. But this isn't a team. This is a team that has individual stars. And outside of Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, maybe like two or three other players, Deion Sanders' concept of a plan isn't to build a winning football team. Where when you look at Matt Rhule and the difference from year one to year two, Matt Rhule is building a team in Lincoln, Nebraska. Coach Sanders is just building a program that gets talked on First Take about on First Take, that gets talked about on ESPN, Fox, CBS, whatever it is, and they generate a lot of social media traction, but ultimately the goal of a coach is to win games on the field. And my bar this year for Colorado was for this season to be a success, they needed to make a bowl game. And I don't think this team is making a bowl game. I said that before the year. I think they're only going to have five wins. And this is a massive week now for Colorado, who they go up against Colorado State. And the reason why I bring this up is because last year, Colorado took care of Nebraska, and then Nebraska returned the favor the following year. Well, last year, Colorado State should have probably won the game. Colorado just found a way to pull the rabbit out of the hat and win. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm an expert on Jay Norvell's squad. But this is a massive moment for Coach Prime in year two. And I am fascinated to see what the Buffaloes are going to look like up against Colorado State. And that's my problem right now with Coach Prime. He isn't building a team. Deion Sanders is not building a team. And the concepts of his plan are very faulty. Sure, I'm not saying Colorado should have never hired him. I was advocating for Deion Heck to get a job in the SEC when he was leaving Jackson State. All right? I was saying SEC, let's go see him like coach Auburn or a school like that. But Deion Sanders right now doesn't have a team. He has individuals. And whose fault is that? It's Coach Prime. He's the head honcho. He's the CEO. And if they lose this game to Colorado State, my oh my, this is over. It is. Like, I'm not saying they're going to fire him. Colorado is still lucky to have him because Colorado was a program, quite frankly, that was dead. And Deion Sanders at least made them relevant in terms of the news. But there is one thing to be relevant in the news and then actually be a good football program. And right now, this is a program that is still weak in the trenches. They have a quarterback in Shedeur Sanders who, let's be real, he quit on the team in the final 2 minutes of the game and went to the locker room and then threw his offensive line under the bus. I get it. The offensive line stinks. But show some leadership. And you don't crush your offensive line publicly as a quarterback. And you have Deion, who is a Hall of Famer, one of the great defensive players, one of the greatest NFL players of all time. And Deion Sanders holds himself to high standards, and he's praising his team for the battle and the fight that they showed in the second half. That's what you're praising your team about? The battle and the fight that you showed in the second half against Nebraska in a game that was over at halftime. So Deion's concepts of a plan right now are about individuals, and it's not about building a winner and building a team. He is building clicks. He is building attention. He is building people actually caring about Colorado, but it's not translating to this being a successful football organization.
As the dust settles from last week's games, it's time to look at which teams are rising.
Touchdown!
And which are falling.
And there's an interception.
Zach ranks his top five NFL and college football teams on this week's edition of Take Five, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
Alrighty, it is time for Take 5 Wednesday on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's start it off in the NFL, and then we will go to college football. We look at the NFL in at number 5. Welcome back, the Houston Texans. I know it was a back-and-forth contest up against the Indianapolis Colts, but you got to see the new additions shine bright for the Texans. Joe Mixon went off in that game. Stephon Diggs, he didn't have his greatest yards and receiving yards in terms of performance in that one, but he did get into the end zone 2 times. Nico Collins did get over 100 yards, and C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryans and company, they pick up where they left off from a year ago, which is impressing people, and the Texans get a week one victory, so they're in at number 5. In at number 4, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. I know Jalen Hurts made some questionable decisions in that game. However, with that being said, the story was Saquon Barkley with not one, not two, but 3 touchdowns. The Philadelphia Eagles are a very good team. They have Super Bowl aspirations. And I look at Philadelphia right now as the 4th best team in the National Football League. Okay, in at number 3. I didn't love what I saw from this team throughout the entirety of the game. But when they needed to, they were at their best. And in overtime, they win the coin toss, and they went back to smash-mouth Detroit Lions football. Montgomery, Gibbs, an excellent 1-2 punch. Jared Goff is a solid quarterback. We know that. I look at this Lions team as a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and up against a very good Rams team, even though the Rams' offensive line was all banged up and Puka Nacua left the game and is now going to be on the short-term IR. That was the game the Lions had to win at home. And when they needed to, they found a way to put the ball in the end zone and not give the ball back to the LA Rams for an opportunity to go on out there and lose the game for the Lions in overtime. So the Lions are in at 3. Number 2, I feel dirty not putting this team at 1. But I have to put them at number 2 because the team that's in at number 1, until they go down, I just don't know how they move out of the number 1 spot. The 49ers are in at 2. You can make an easy case that they should be 1 after their week 1 performance up against the JETS Jets. That was a coaching masterpiece by Kyle Shanahan. No Christian McCaffrey, no problem. Jordan Mason gets put into the fold, and he goes out there for nearly 150 rushing yards, and he was great in the game. That is a 49ers team that is just so complete, and we know it's Super Bowl or bust. Even with all the contract disputes in the summer, it didn't matter. It didn't impact them on the field. The 49ers didn't just beat the Jets. They rolled the JETS Jets. Now, Pat Boyle, I got to give you credit because I always like to find a diamond in a rough. How the heck did you know to draft Jordan Mason in fantasy football?
Yeah, appreciate that. I got him 13th round, and I just figured, you know, I'm looking for late value in a fantasy football draft. Why not take the guy that is Christian McCaffrey's backup in case McCaffrey gets hurt?
Which is not crazy because McCaffrey gets hurt a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he played every game, I believe every game last year. But I was like, you know what? He's got the calf issue. Like, they might try to be a little safer with him weeks one and two. I didn't think that we'd get the surprise news that not only is he not playing week one, that he's probably not going to play this Sunday either. So that was kind of instant return, instant long return on what I thought was good value. But yeah, I just figured why not take McCaffrey's backup for a team that is going to run the ball no matter what. We've seen them use their backup, their third string running backs in years past when it was Mostert and Jeff Wilson. So if McCaffrey went down, they're using Jordan Mason. They're not going to not use him. I didn't think he was going to run for $150, but I mean, it looks like it's the steal of the draft now.
Alrighty, and in at number one, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. They could have lost that game to the Baltimore Ravens. If Likely gets the second foot down, the Ravens are going for two. If they score, the Chiefs would have lost the game. But this is just another game where the defense for Kansas City is the story. This defense for now over a year has been better than the Chiefs' offense. And that is scary for the rest of the NFL because the Chiefs have the best offensive player, the best player, period, in football in Patrick Mahomes. And a positive I take away from Kansas City in the offensive side of the ball, Rashee Rice looked wonderful. Xavier Worthy, you saw the flashes of brilliance that he could have with the two touchdowns that he put out there on the field. And Isaiah Pacheco, we know this, he is a hard physical runner. And the Chiefs, they win that game with basically Travis Kelce being a non-factor. Chris Jones was great in the defensive side of the ball, and that's a team in Kansas City where when they don't even play their best, they're still better than all the rest, and that's why they're in at the number one spot, even though you can make the case it should be the 49ers after what we saw in week one. So my top five teams in the NFL, Chiefs, uno, 49ers, dos, Lions, trace, uno, dos, trace, cuatro for the Eagles, and then cinco for the Texans. All righty. Stuart Kovac, speak now, forever hold your peace.
All right, what about the team that lost to the Chiefs in week one, a team that many people have in the Super Bowl, the Baltimore Ravens?
Yeah, so it came down to half a toe. Because if they go on out there, make that catch, and then, boom, get the two-point conversion, they're in the top five. They were in the fifth spot when we entered this season for the top five teams, and we did this going back to last week. However, with that being said, we know the Ravens are good, but they got to win these big games. And I know you don't win a Super Bowl in week one, but you're going up against the standard. You're going up against a team that you lost in the AFC Championship game to a season ago in the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's another moment where you don't win a game and you don't win this game. So the Ravens are really good, right? They didn't really get crushed for losing this game in terms of the division. I know it's only one game, because you had two other teams inside the AFC North lose, and the Steelers are the only team that win, and they're 1-0. But the Ravens got to start winning these games, and until they do so, I keep them just outside the top five.
All right, this team got off to a slow start on Sunday, but eventually won against the Jaguars. What about the Miami Dolphins?
Yeah, I don't put the Dolphins in there, and I think it's a big statement for the Dolphins tomorrow night in a game that they are expected to win, and they are a team that is ready to beat Buffalo, but we heard the same thing last year, and we saw at the end of the season at home, even when Josh Allen was practically begging for the Dolphins to go win that division, the Dolphins couldn't do that, and Buffalo's still trying to figure out their offense outside of Josh Allen, where we know the Dolphins, even though for tomorrow night they're without Raheem Mostert, maybe Devon Achane won't be playing. You know what you have at the wide receiver position, starting with Tyreek Hill, and Tua statistically is a solid quarterback. But the reason the Dolphins can't be in the top five of my power rankings after week one is that was a Jaguars loss more so than a Miami Dolphins win. If Travis Etienne just holds on to the football at 17-7, they increase that score and turn out the lights, the party's over, and everyone's slamming the Miami Dolphins. So give credit, because good teams find a way to win when they don't play their best, but we're talking about the top five teams in the NFL, and the Dolphins aren't one of those right now.
All right, last NFL one, they get the Dak deal done and they blow out the Browns. What about the Dallas Cowboys?
I thought about Dallas, and I know I am called a Dallas Cowboys hater, and that is a fair and that is an accurate statement. But this is what the Cowboys are. They're just a good team. They're not a great team. They look like a great team up against the Cleveland Browns, and Deshaun Watson is just absolutely lost on the football field. But you look at Dallas, I can't get extremely giddy about a week one regular season game where they beat a team that's not even considered to be a great team in the Cleveland Browns. I'm not telling Cowboys fans don't be excited with just week one, but for now, me to do this song and dance of, oh, the Cowboys are great, right, top five, that's elite category, I can't do that because this is a Cowboys team the last 3 years, 12 wins, 12 wins, 12 wins, and the farthest they have gone is to the second round of the playoffs, and that was only 1 year, so that's why I have the Cowboys on the outside looking in. I'm very distracted, by the way. There is a fly that is in this studio, and it was buzzing around my head during that segment. Oh, was it Mike Pence a few years ago? I think they had like a fly on one of the debates that was on his, what was his collar? It was on his cabeza?
I think it was on his head.
It was on his head?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And that's now two political references in this show, and we are not a political show. I'm talking about the fly with Mike Pence and then Trump's concepts of a plan and how it relates to Deion Sanders not having a good concept of a plan while coaching the Colorado Buffaloes because he's trying to win based off individuals rather than building a team. All right, that's enough politics talk for me today. Let's go to college football. I know it wasn't pretty, but I still put Alabama in the top five because here's what I know about Alabama. Last year, Jalen Milroe was in a college football playoff, and also Kalen DeBoer at Washington was in a national championship game. The first half was ugly. Then they pulled away up against South Florida. Two cupcakes out of the gate. Western Kentucky 63-0. South Florida 42-16. Good one the next 2 weeks for Alabama. They should beat Wisconsin. And then the week after that, it is the biggest test of them all in college football because you go up against Georgia. So this turns into a really fun, it's over 3 weeks, but two-game stretch for Alabama. But because of DeBoer, because of Milroe, and the dual threat ability of Jalen Milroe, I have Alabama in at number five. In at number four, right now, I think my two favorite players in college football are Ashton Jeanty at Boise State, and he is not Boise State, no offense to the Broncos. They just lost the game to Oregon. They had a great effort, and they probably should have won the game. I'm not putting Boise State in my top five. But welcome to the top five, the Tennessee Volunteers, led by Nico Yamaliava. Because week one against Chattanooga, right, everyone was raving about him with what he did, and even Urban Meyer was as well, but we said, okay, it's Chattanooga. Not that NC State is this great program, but they are a respectable program under Dave Doran. And Tennessee beat the snot out of NC State 51-10. And their quarterback just continues. I know he made some mistakes in the game, but their quarterback is just a heck of a player. And I can't wait to see how we're talking about him at the end of the year. And you started to see a little bit more of his mobility on Saturday up against NC State. So Nico Yamaliava, I put him and the Tennessee Volunteers in at number four. Three, I don't love this team. I don't love their coach, but they are a really good team, and that's the Ohio State Buckeyes sitting at number three, and we'll see what happens when they go up against a better opponent, but this is just a team in Ohio State that we know is one of the best in college football. Alrighty, in at number two. Horns up, not horns down. Texas had a national championship look, as for some reason my headphones can't stay in my ears today, and they keep on falling on out. I think I had the left one in my right and the right in the left, so that maybe was the reason. I had the same issue yesterday, so I think I just figured out the reason. But Texas is back. They made the college football playoff last year, and then going to Ann Arbor and going into the big house with Michigan, I was wondering how this game would play out. Like, I knew Texas would win, but it would be a close game where you wipe some sweat off your head, and it's like, oh, we were lucky to win that, or are you just going to bludgeon Michigan? And it was the latter rather than the former. That was a championship quality performance where Texas looked superior and Michigan looked inferior. And finally, just like the Chiefs, until someone takes this team down, they are the best team in college football, just like the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL. They smother Clemson in week one. Who cares about Tennessee Tech week two? They should beat Kentucky, who Kentucky couldn't even compete up against South Carolina this weekend. And then you get a fun one at the end of the month up against Alabama. But it's the Georgia Bulldogs. They sit in at the number one spot. So Georgia 1, Texas 2, Ohio State 3, Tennessee 4, Alabama 5. That's my top five for the week. Stu, speak now, forever hold your peace.
All right, what about a team that was top five preseason but has had two kind of disappointing games, if you will, the Oregon Ducks?
Yeah, that's why. That's why they're not in my top five. I still think they could be a national championship contender, and I like Dylan Gabriel, but that team has to get going. Very sloppy week one performance against Idaho, and they almost lost that game to Boise State, who's a very good G5 program, but I wanted to see Oregon flex their muscles a little bit. On Saturday night, they didn't do so. So that's why Oregon's on the outside looking in.
All right. This team has outscored their opponents 128-3 so far. But, of course, it's against Furman in Middle Tennessee State. What about Ole Miss?
So that's why I don't put them in my top five. They are there. And, quite frankly, they may only have one loss in the regular season this year for Ole Miss. My question with Ole Miss going into this year was, what was the defense going to be? So far, no points allowed in the first game, 3 points allowed in the second game, but they're up against Furman and Middle Tennessee. You could only play what's on your schedule. And you look at this Ole Miss schedule, Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, Kentucky, South Carolina, then they have LSU and Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi State. This team should be undefeated, definitely, going into that October 12th matchup against LSU. I like Ole Miss over LSU and Oklahoma, so quite frankly, I think they should be undefeated going into their November 9th matchup against Georgia. I just want to see, when they play better competition, how many improvements the defense have made. So that's why I just remain a little skeptical, even though I think they're going to be a really good team, and I keep them just outside the top five.
A close call against Bowling Green on Saturday. What about Penn State?
Week one, I loved them against West Virginia. You play a game that you were lucky to survive and win that game up against Bowling Green. That reminds me of the old James Franklin. That's why I keep Penn State out of the top five.
And what about the Missouri Tigers, who have yet to give up a single point this season?
That was a team, them and Ole Miss were the two teams I really struggled with without putting them in the top five for this week. And I know it was Murray State and it was Buffalo. And you have a good test in Boston College coming up this weekend, who has played better than what people thought, but Missouri should beat them. And I circle that Missouri-Alabama game. I think people like Missouri. If Missouri goes to Tuscaloosa and they beat Alabama on October 26th, then they will get a lot of national praise. They're really damn good, but for me right now, just outside of the top five, because I give the benefit of the doubt to Alabama with DeBoer and also with Jalen Milroe. It's time to ask the pros. You, the listener, get to ask us a question. It's brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sports Net or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Be listening later in the show when we might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Josh Pate going to stop by, CBS Sports college football analyst, at the top of the hour. So 15 minutes from now, Ryan Hickey in studio an hour from now. And Willie Colon, the former Jet and Steeler offensive lineman, will stop by at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific time. Pat Boyle, who is with us today, is it fair to classify you as a loud, drunk, passionate, but dumb Notre Dame football fan?
I'm not drunk right now. And also, I don't think I'm dumb, but yes, loud, passionate Notre Dame fan, yes.
So I remember, and we did some investigation, and we had to get the cobwebs off some of these old takes of yours. But I remember when the coaches poll came out, you were on this show filling in, because we never have a full crew on this show. And Patty Boyle was filling in. I don't remember. I don't think it was Stu. I think it was for Samter. And when Pat Boyle was filling in, I said, all right, here's the coaches poll. Who's a team that's underranked? And Notre Dame, I believe, was seventh.
Correct.
In the coaches poll. And your answer was Notre Dame. So if you forgot this take, we have the audio here right now. Let's just revisit this 2 minute and 20 second exchange that Pat Boyle and your boy had a few weeks ago.
It'll be the Notre Dame Fighting Irish there, Zach.
What a surprise.
Because they should have been ranked top five. I'm surprised they got pushed.
Top five? Come on, Pat. They're not better than Georgia. You know that, right?
Correct.
They're not better than Ohio State. They're not better than Oregon. They're not better than Texas. You think Notre Dame...
Why aren't they better than Texas?
Texas just made the college football playoff last year.
Yeah, and their defense is horrible. Defense is horrendous.
And your quarterback is Riley Leonard from Duke.
Yeah, he's a stud.
Sam Hartman was supposed to be the greatest thing last year, too. I like Audric Estime. I like Hartman, too. Come on. Notre Dame is a very good team, but to say that they are elite. Four or five.
I don't care that Joe Alt is gone because every year
they pump out a great offensive
line. The next offensive tackle. Notre Dame finds the next tackle that's going to go top 10 overall in the first round. They would kick Texas's ass in the trenches right now if they played them week one. And I can't wait to watch
them. Yeah, you're wrong on that. But
I can't wait to watch them do that to A&M with the 12th man.
Come on, A&M. The fact that I was surprised A&M was in the top 25. Elko coming in, first-year head coach. You better be able to beat A&M. You actually get jacked up every season thinking that Notre Dame's going to be great.
They are.
You were the same bozo last year that didn't you guarantee they were going to beat Ohio State?
I did, and they should have.
But they didn't. So I'm just saying, I think Notre Dame's a playoff team. If they don't make the playoffs in a 12-team format, that's a disgrace. But in at seven, I thought that was a little optimistic. So what do you think Notre Dame can accomplish this year is my question.
College football playoff. They will beat Texas A&M, and Notre Dame will be 11-1 at worst this year.
So you that's as far as you're willing to go is in the playoff.
The expectation for me for Notre Dame this year is to get to the college football playoff semifinal. And then they will, in theory, be going up against any of these top four teams.
So be one of the four teams remaining when you say semifinal.
Yep, one of the four teams remaining.
Okay.
And if they avoid Georgia in that semifinal game, they can beat anybody else.
If Notre Dame is one of the four teams remaining at the end of the season, I will dress up as a leprechaun.
Really?
And we'll do the show as a leprechaun. I will be the largest leprechaun ever created. So a few things there. It was laughable. Then, when you said Notre Dame was going to be better than Texas and they beat the snot out of Texas, that was number one. It was also laughable when you said that Notre Dame was going to be in the semifinal of the college football playoff just as long as they don't have to face Georgia before that. So, I have to ask you, just out of the kindness of my heart, Pat Boyle, after they beat A&M 23-13 and the program is flying high and here come the Irish, Pat Boyle, all fired up about beating an overrated A&M team, you lose to Northern Illinois, who you paid over $1 million to play, and then you lost to them 16-14. The floor is yours. What are your thoughts on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
Before? Yeah, with regards to the Irish, we are on to 2025.
It's over?
The season's over. The season's over. The coach is done. He cannot coach. I hope Marcus Freeman has already put in applications to be the next model for H&M or Banana Republic with the khakis and his, you know, very tight tops that he wears every week. Good job. Great. Look, great win beating A&M, but it set up an ultimate loser all-time down spot for Marcus Freeman because it's obvious. They won that game. And they thought that they could just sleepwalk through a very decent MAC team. Yeah. Not taking any credit away from Northern Illinois, their coach Thomas Hammock. Oh, by the way, he's on whatever podcast he's on, and Marcus Freeman is texting him after the game. He goes, hey, you know, in case you want to know how we beat you, you know, what we studied.
That was on Barstool, yeah. I saw that.
And Marcus Freeman's like, yeah, sure, man, I'll take you up on that. I mean, this guy is the ultimate fraud of a head coach, and I can't believe I ever remotely bought into him after what I saw last year with Ohio State, not being able to put 11 guys on the field in the biggest spot in the game 2 years ago, losing that game to Marshall at home. I should have known that something like
this Charles Huff, baby! Gotta love him!
Should have known that something like this was possible again! After an incredible statement win to open the year, they go out and think, oh, Northern Illinois, nah, who cares? Doesn't matter. We can go ahead and just, you know, cakewalk through this one. Season's over. Season is over before we've hit October. They should have been running the gamut through this schedule, running over Florida State, who stinks, beating USC the last weekend of the year to go 12-0 and get into the college football playoff and be the number 5 seed, and they would have had an easy second round semifinal or quarterfinal matchup, whatever the hell it would have been if they play the 4 seed, because it would have been the best of the ACC or the Big 12, and they probably would have won that game.
No, but they wouldn't have. You said Riley Leonard was a stud.
Yeah, he stinks.
A stud.
He's horrible.
He's a dud.
I can't believe I ever bought into Riley Leonard, watching him bowl over cupcakes of the ACC the last 2 years while at Duke. I mean, again, watching that game, Zach, in Detroit this weekend from an airport bar, I was about 7 blue moons deep as it was.
Bartender Jack.
And I wanted to have another 15 after that. Just the putting your putting a tail between your legs to keep it PG for Marcus Freeman. Fourth and four from the Northern Illinois 45, we punt. Fourth and, was it six from the Northern Illinois 39, and we punt. Just
how about that 62-yard field goal attempt at the end of the game?
And they got two field goals blocked. Yeah, we go for a 62-yard field goal. They're icing the clock. They're running it right down Northern Illinois' throat. Second and one from midfield with about 8 minutes left. And Riley Leonard underthrows a ball by about 15 yards to try to get it into the red zone. Why are you making that throw? So, you know what? Now it's very painful that I'm having to relive this. So, yes, congratulations, Zach.
Pat,
you were right. I was wrong. Irish stink.
They could win out. Well, we expect you for the blind optimism with Notre Dame.
No,
you had it before
over.
The year.
Season's over.
You don't think they're going to win out?
Season's over, because if they can
only
lose...
Only two losses? Maybe get in the football, college football playoff? Losses?
If they can lose to Northern Illinois at home... They can lose to Purdue on the road this week. They can lose to a bad Florida State team. They can get pummeled by USC. The season is over. Marcus Freeman will be looking for a job after this year.
I think he may be back next year. I think there's a chance he may be back. And then next year, Pat will say, here come the Irish national champions.
If Marcus Freeman's coaching Notre Dame next year, I rescind my fandom. You can archive that.
Get ready to root for Temple football and be in the cellar with me, buddy. Be all the way down to the basement.